Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. My name is Carrie Sawyer, and I am your host. We are going to have another amazing conversation today with my friend Kevin. And it's so funny because Kevin popped up in my DMs on Instagram after listening to one of the solo episodes, and he was like, "Ooh, you should have called me to have that conversation." And I was like, "Okay, let's do this." So here we are. It is my pleasure to introduce you to my friend Kevin Askew. Kevin is a devoted husband, father, and son. He is an online radio station owner and an adventurous life learner who is eager to introduce STEAM, that's science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics, to young, inquisitive minds. Let's jump right in with Kevin. Please join me in welcoming him to the Inclusion First Podcast. Hi, Kevin. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. How are you doing today? I'm so excited to talk to you. It's been a minute.
Yes, it's been a minute. I'm glad to be here. Couldn't wait either.
This is great. So, Kevin, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to jump right into the questions.
Ooh, where do I start? That's kind of a loaded question.
Right. Who am I?
I always look at it like this. I'm actually a husband, a father, and a son first and foremost. That's how I look at that, and a brother, because I'm the oldest of four. But much more, I'm actually an individual who loves to help, and I'll help anyone. But also I do. I'll say this. I am also the chair emeritus of this National Society of Black Engineers professional chapter here in San Diego, 2010 through 2012.
Nice.
And you know, I am still a lifetime member of National Society of Black Engineers. I kind of backed off a little bit, mainly because, you know, I'm a husband and a father, and I do take care of my children a lot, you know. But yeah, I do still mentor the people that came behind me in NSBE. You know, when they have questions, I answer them. I point them in the right direction. That's how I've been taught. You know, if you have the answer, give the answer. If you don't, please point them in the right direction, or, you know, let's research it together, that kind of thing. Yes, I'm also one of these people that literally have no problem with being told that I'm wrong. I can own up to that, because, you know, I'll make sure that I correct myself, that kind of thing. And yeah, please excuse my son in the background. He's pretty excited about watching his iPad right now.
We've been getting some really great sound effects that I hope make it into this cut. Yes. Awesome. Well, Kevin, welcome to the podcast. You know, I met you in the exact role that you're talking about in helping. Yes. We met at Qualcomm in the African-American group, the African-American Employee Network there, yes, which I believe has a different name than it did have before.
What?
I was talking to George and Dr. Mike. Yeah. Hi, shout out to George and Dr. Mike at Qualcomm.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, they named it. It's renamed. So we'll have to get them on so we can find out what the new name is. But
I need to know that.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, I was trying to change the name too.
I know. You had a really good one too. Black,
yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yep. Black leaders at Qualcomm, and the A was the at sign.
Yeah, that was really good.
So,
Kevin and I met helping, uplifting, empowering, creating opportunities for other African-Americans and Black people at Qualcomm. And we've got to do a lot of fun stuff together. We've gone to some NSBE conferences, and I was really excited to get him here on the show and to hear his insights and his takes on some of these questions that we typically go through. So we're going to jump right in to the first question that I ask all of my guests. And that is, what does it mean to you, Kevin, to be an activist in 2022? And do you consider yourself to be one?
Do I consider myself to be one? Oh, so I have never thought of myself as an activist. But I do find myself in a lot of times in an activist role. It's varying types of activism too, whether coming into a new position where I am and basically bringing the personality out of people, that kind of thing, or just actually, the funniest thing is a lot of my recent activism has come from listening to my children, just listening to them and some of their gripes. Now, yeah, my daughter's 7 and my son is 5, but man, if you pay attention to children, you pay attention to your own children, you get some really good information about what's going on. For instance, my son and daughter, they go to 2 separate elementary schools. My son's school at the beginning of the year, they put out, each of the elementary schools, they have minimal days. My son's school has minimal day on Tuesday. My daughter's school's minimal day on Wednesday, meaning mm-hmm. they get out of school like 2 hours early.
Okay.
Crazy. But at the beginning of the year, my son's school put out a schedule that of all their extra minimal days outside of their Tuesdays. They gave us a schedule. I'm like, oh, that's great. That we can kind of plan ahead. Me and my wife can kind of plan ahead. But my daughter's school didn't. After about a month, there was this minimal day that popped out of nowhere. So that's when I went to the principal and I go, would you happen to have a schedule of all your extra minimal days? And she looked at me and was like, I've never thought about that. Now, I then sent that same question to, say, the school board, SDUSD school board. And they're like, well, we need to take a look at that. Because my main question was, how is it that 2 elementary school in the same school district, they're literally doing 2 different things. I can understand that my daughter's elementary school is a Mandarin immersion elementary school versus my son's school, which isn't. But as far as, say like wording, planning, stuff like that, they should be similar. They should be similar. We recently went through a school year change because my son used to have year round school. Now it's traditional school year. So, why couldn't they do a lot of other things together? So I kind of look at it from that aspect, or something my daughter brought to me, which was kind of, it was kind of out of her acting bad. She threw her lunch on the floor one day. And of course they called me at work. Okay. Why'd you throw your food on the floor? My daughter's. And she told me because they were having pizza. And I go, okay, so what? Come on, listen to this. She said they were having pizza. Now, before my daughter got to that elementary school, before we enrolled her in public school, she used to go to a Chinese preschool for the previous 2 years ahead of that. Mm-hmm. She was asking me, where's the bok choy? Where is the fried rice? Where is the shumai? Stuff like that. Yes, my daughter's part Chinese. because my wife is half Chinese. So she's asking relevant questions.
Yeah. Where's the food that I know and love?
Yes. And so I went to the school again. It's like, okay, if this is a Mandarin immersion school, how come you're feeding them pizza and tacos? You get it?
Only? Yeah.
Yes.
So she was mad about the pizza.
Yeah, she was mad about the pizza. She was looking forward to what she knew was Chinese. She knew that she was in a Chinese type school. So why aren't they feeding her Chinese type food? So that's kind of how I say, as far as activism coming from my kids, I'm actually listening to what's happening to them to give me clues on what to do and kind of how to approach their schools. You know, I'm not, you know, I didn't just go up there as a, or as my wife and I joke, I'm not going up there as the angry Black man. I'm going up there with actual concerns,
sure. You know,
and they are concerns that came from my children or the situations that they've been placed in, you know, that kind of thing. So that's kind of the, you know, like I say, I don't see myself as an activist, but because of certain things, I do play those roles in various ways. You know, I'm just trying to be a father and a husband that's trying to make things cool for everybody, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, because I figure at my daughter's school, everybody would probably love it if they got Chinese food for lunch instead of tacos.
For sure. So, all right. So I'm so excited that I decided I was still going to like follow the regular script on this, because you gave us a completely different perspective on what activism looks like. And that is activism as a parent. And we got some intersections. We got some intersectionality happening with, you know, the Mandarin and Mandarin food and pizza.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, we've got these different dynamics going on. But the thing I really want to point out is that like activism, number one, is happening right where you are.
Yeah.
And that you're choosing to engage with these things. You're like, hey, I have questions about this. Like, hey, why is this missing? Or why isn't this happening? And, you know, where many of us are afraid of being the angry Black, fill in the adjective. But they're just questions, right?
Yeah, they are questions. And the funny thing is, you've met my wife before. And, and you know, on the outside, she looks like the sweetest person you would ever meet. And yes, if you introduce yourself to her, she is a very sweet person. And she might seem delicate. But guess what? She's not delicate like a rose. She's delicate like a nuclear bomb. So I'm not the one you need to be afraid of.
Right.
Yes. So that's kind of like the funny thing about our whole family dynamics. Yeah.
You bring to the table like, oh, thank goodness it's Mr. Askew.
Right. So, I mean, to me, it's almost like, that's the other type of activism too. I'm trying to keep you from hearing the wrath of Mrs. Askew, because, you know, I don't think you want to hear that one.
Yeah. Now this is beautiful. Just calling out these different intersections of diversity that we often don't think about when we hear the term activist, because it calls certain things and certain, you know, it calls race to mind most readily. And, you know, we're entering Women's History Month, so calls gender into mind, but parents, and that's a total intersection of your identity that has a lot to do with, you know, how you're navigating through the world and the questions and needs that you have. And I think it's really beautiful that, you know, you're listening to your kids, and even though they're 7 and 5, you're like, hey, you know what? What you said makes sense. I'm about to go find out. Yeah.
I mean, as a father, I have to field thousands of questions and I do my best to answer every last one of them. And when I can't, then I have questions for other people. You know, because that's where it happens. Yeah.
So, Kevin, you have a multiracial family.
Yes.
And just in everything that's happened with Black people, with Asian people in these last, you know, 2-3 years, how do you talk to your kids about what's going on? I get that question a lot. How are people talking to their kids about race, about what's happening? What has been your experience, you and your wife, with talking to your multiracial children?
Ooh.
I went real deep real fast.
No, that's no problem. So literally my son just really don't care right now.
He's five. Your son is five, right?
He really doesn't care.
He's not there yet.
Yeah. My daughter is starting to feel some of that. Being the only Black and nobody really understands that she is part Asian. But her being the only Black child in class, you know, she's starting to ask the question of, I want to have my hair straight. And, and I go, you know, cause she says her friends have straight hair, and I go, look, you know, I try to tell her, look, that's cool. And we can straighten your hair, but I think your friends would probably want to have your hair more than you want their hair, you know, because you come to class and we were in Miami the last week of January. And my sister, my mom had my daughter taken to a beauty salon and got her hair braided and beads and everything put in it. Mm-hmm. She comes back to school the next week and everybody's like, oh, how'd you get your hair like that? Uh-huh. You know, how can I get my hair like that? But yet and still, my daughter's asking, can she have straight hair? That's just the next phase. The first phase was she wanted makeup.
Oh, gosh.
But, you know, I try to tell her, like, the majority of the time when I take her to school, we have this thing that I try to tell her, have her say to me every morning, you know, what is it? I tell her, I am somebody, and she repeats it back to me, and I can do anything. And she repeats that to me. But then, you know, I then talk to her about, you know, the fact that, yes, she's the only child that looks like her in the class and probably in the school, even though there's a few others in that school. Like, really, I can count them on one hand.
Sure. Uh-huh.
But, you know, I told her that, look, you're something special, and I want you to understand that. And you know, I let her know it, and I try to have her, you know, kind of express what she's feeling, and I listen to her constantly, and I kind of explain it to her, like, look, yeah, you know, as far as your hair, yeah, you know, daddy can make sure you get your hair straight, but are you going to keep it? Yeah, are you going to maintain it? You know, and then I kind of bring that to her because she also wants a pet. And I
this and is one I of go, the top three asks, straight yeah, hair, right? Makeup, and a pet.
Right. And I go, you know,
that sounds right.
Know, you know, at first she's like, well, I want goldfish. I'm like, okay, well, we travel a lot. What happens to your goldfish if we're gone for 2 weeks? You know, you can't feed it. It's gonna die. And oh, okay. Then I had to explain what death was, but
you're like, oh, I planted a question in a question.
Yeah. Right. And then I go, you know, then she wanted a dog or a cat, then a hamster. And I'm like, you have to be able to take care of those. Cause daddy is not going to take care of it. You know, how are you going to feed it? Well, daddy has money. And I'm like, this is daddy's money, you know, but I try to tell her, like, look, you know, with all these things, you know, all these things that you want, and, you know, you want your straight hair, you have to be able to take care of it. You know, you can have straight hair. You just have to be able to take care of it. It's like your hair, you know, I kind of let her know, as far as her hair is concerned, your hair needs care just like you do. I have to take care of you. If you want your hair a specific way, you got to take care of it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, you know, I kind of let her know my responsibility is to you. We get your hair straight. Your responsibility is to your hair. You think you want to do that every day? And she kind of thinks about it for a little bit. But, you know, she still kind of wants it. So I told her, we'll get your hair straightened, but we're going to do it the old fashioned way.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I just saw some hot comb somewhere and I was like, what is that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, my mom was like, no, you could just use a flat iron. And I was like, no. No, I need her to have the real Black experience.
Oh, gosh.
So,
wow, Kevin.
I'm not going to do that, but
I know. But it went through your mind though.
Yeah. So it's just, I have her try to think about those things. And then she hasn't quite hit me with some, you know, like, hey, some kid is being mean to her as far as race is concerned. Mm-hmm. But I have kind of opened that door. Like, you know, she's told me that, hey, some kid was mean to her, calling her fat. And I'm like, well, look, that kid's mean. You don't have to play with them anymore. And, you know, I'm not worried about the weight part as far as she's concerned. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I did tell her, you know, she said she also wants to be a gymnast. And I go, well, you could be a gymnast even at your size. It's just going to take a little bit more work, but you can be one, you know, remember, you know. And I told her, you remember what we say every morning? And she tells it back to me. I can do anything. I was like, exactly. But, you know, I tell her it's going to take some work from you. It's going to take some work from you, and you have to be really dedicated to it. Now, the fun thing is she used to come to me that she hated learning Chinese. But
how many years has she been learning Chinese now?
Probably 4.5.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But now, you know, she's in first grade. Now she's teaching my wife how to write Chinese characters.
Wow.
Yeah, at 7. She's teaching my wife to write and understand them. Like, you know, to understand, like, not just this character is this word in English, but that this character is similar to this other character, which means something similar. Mm. And my wife never put those things together. She just, you know, really, oh, this character is this character is that. But no, my daughter's been able to show her that the similarities in the characters kind of spark off the similarities in the meanings and the words, mm-hmm. and what they look like, you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, to me, that's the fun part of, you know, I told her she's going to be a ninja when she grows up, because no one knows, no one knows that she knows, no one is going to expect that she knows, yeah, her to know Mandarin.
Be fluent in it. Yes. And be able to write it and understand it.
Right. So, and yeah. That's the other thing is, you know, I let her know, wouldn't you like it if someone's speaking Chinese around you and you know what they're saying? And if they're talking about you, you can respond back to them in that language and they will shut up. And she kind of giggles like, yeah. So yeah, it's one of those awkward, but challenging things. And I'm never afraid of a challenge, really. And yes, that's what comes with being a parent. Like, I mean, I literally just told her yesterday that, you know, being a parent does not come with the book. So we all are learning how to be parents on the fly. Like, we're just learning it as we go, and we're trying to do the best we can. You know, some are better at it than others. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as long as we're not harming anyone, we're all trying to do our best. So she kind of understood that, because she did ask the question of, you know, can I learn anything in a book? And that was my answer to her is, you know, if someone wrote a book on how to be a parent and it was a good book, they might make a lot of money, you know. But I go, but every parent is different and every child is different. So you cannot just write a book for a particular parent or a particular child, you know, because even with my children, they're both different. You know, even though one's a boy and one's a girl, they're still very different, you know. So it's one of those, it's kind of a rough playing field for my wife and I, but it's a challenge that I love, actually.
So where did the idea come from that you, your daughter, and your ritual in the morning where you say, I am somebody and I can do anything? Where did that come from?
It came from a very scary place. So, you know, when she first started elementary school, public school, we, you know, my wife and I would go, okay, yeah, we're going to have her ride the bus home, you know. Mm-hmm. Third week riding the bus, my daughter was left on the bus stop by herself.
Wow.
And my wife called me frantic. Like, she called me frantic, like, literally, just, I couldn't even make out what she was saying. And I had to calm her down before I could understand what she was saying. And, you know, one of the other parents that my wife knew from the Chinese preschool, who, you know, who they had, my wife had their number and they had each other's number, called my wife and, you know, hey, does your daughter still take the school bus? And yeah, well, she's sitting here by on the bus stop by herself. Oh my gosh. We had some issues with that. Like, we had a bunch of issues with that.
Yeah. How old was she at this time?
5.
I mean, she's only 7 now, so she wasn't old. Yeah.
Yeah, she was 5. And yeah, that's when the angry black dude came out. And the angry mixed mom came out as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think my daughter quite understood what that meant as far as being left at the bus stop by herself.
How did she end up left at the bus? Like, what happened?
The so-called bus monitor didn't count her or forgot about her or something, whatever that story was. The original bus monitor was out sick and the new bus monitor didn't realize she was supposed to get on the bus or something like that. And the bus driver was like, that's not my job. And I'm like, that's when I had to bite my tongue. But to me, I figure, I don't know if it affected her, but I'm going to try and instill in her that she is somebody and that she can do anything to kind of cut that off before it gets to be a problem.
Sure.
You know, that's where that one came from. And wow. I look her in the eye, tell her that every morning, and she loves doing that. She just, so I, that's where that one came from. It's just, it was literally me being scared, you know,
that she would take this in a way that,
yeah,
you know, was damaging to who she is as a person and how, right, if she matters or not.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, she does matter. We all matter. And what you're doing is so important. My mom, I don't know when she started telling me this, but she told me my whole life I could do anything that I put my mind to. And I like still, yeah, it's like a core value. I might not even, it's like in my subconscious. I'm like, I could do that. I could do that. Where does that come from?
Yeah.
That comes from these values. And I think the reason why I wanted to dig into this a little bit is because when people and parents ask this question about how do you talk to your kids about race, it's really before that.
Yeah.
It's the values that you're instilling in your children,
yep,
you know, from day one that really help to facilitate those conversations and how they're going to react as a child of color or as not a child of color, as they face these different situations.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, and I also tell her, like, you know, you have all these friends. I told her, you know, I didn't grow up with this the type of friends you have. Not that that was an issue, I just didn't grow up with it. And I, you know, I kind of tell her, like, look, it's the friends I grew up with, you know, I kind of let her know kind of the black history of things as far as playing the dozens or I kind of let her know these things. And, you know, she would, like, you know, literally you would talk to each other like that. I'm like, but it was fun. And I go and I kind of let her know, like, look, it's one of these things of, you know, I call her a specific nickname. She doesn't like it, but I'm the only one that can call her that.
Mm-hmm.
I call my son a particular nickname. He really doesn't care, but he responds when I call him that, you know. And I go, how would you feel if anybody else called you by the nickname your daddy calls you? And she goes, I wouldn't like it. And I would tell them to stop it. I go, well, you know, that's kind of what the dozens are. You know, you grow with friends, you play these games that only you and your friends play. Mm. You know, you talk to your friends that only you and your friends talk to each other. So, you know, I kind of let her know that, you know, you have your friends. You play with them, you talk to them, keep it that way. Don't let anything change you. They may change. If they change, then you move on. But if they don't change, you don't change. They stay your friends. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of how I deal. I mean, I kind of talk to her constantly a lot about that. I mean, because she is my daughter, and I, you know, my mom tells me constantly she has you wrapped around her finger. I'm like, I'm like, of course she does. You know, this is my daughter. You know, this is my brown daughter. You know,
yeah.
And I can't let anybody else have her wrapped around their finger unless I feel they're worthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and it already started. Yeah, right. Like, right. These are the values that start from day one. So, Kevin, I have another question for you. Sure. Around this, and I want to kind of combine these two things that we've been talking about.
Uh-huh.
How would you say that being a parent has made you a better activist?
You know, being a parent has made me a better activist. You know, it's done that. Man. So here it is. So from day one, my wife and I, we found out she was pregnant with a girl. Let's put it mm-hmm. that way. 'Cause you know, my wife was at that age where they deemed it a high risk pregnancy. So they're, you know, they had to
it's
do
like
all
over
these
35.
Yeah. Over 35. Yeah. My wife was 38, mm-hmm. at the time. And yeah, we got the genetic test and yeah, we want to know the sex. So mm-hmm. they told us it was a girl. So, immediately I had a rush of all these feelings, emotions, just all kind of things that I had never felt before. And yes, I cried. I cried. And then I became Papa Bear.
Mm.
Like I literally became Papa, like a Papa Bear figure. Definitely the day she was born, I became Papa Bear, like a Papa Bear figure. And you know, in my head, it was almost like something changed. Like before, I had no problem with, you know, I had no problem with, hey, kid needs help, I don't mind helping him. But now it was in overdrive.
Hmm.
Whereas I felt, now I have children, I want certain things for my children. And there needs to be things that I have to do to bring that forth. I have to do certain things. I just can't, you know, I can't let someone else do this for me. Just like, you know, the thousand of questions that my daughter asks and my son does too. You know, I take it upon myself to answer as many of them as I can, because if not, then they're going to get the answers from someone else and have that person's view of whatever question they asked.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be the correct answer, or it may not be the correct answer from her point of view.
Sure.
You know, so that's kind of where my activism as a parent came into play. Just the fact of just, you know, Papa Bear turning on, and that meant not just protecting them, but also guiding them, teaching them, and showing them all of that, you know? So yeah, that's why, the things I like to do, I let them explore that, you know, let them explore playing music, on my equipment. I let them explore mm-hmm. playing on my piano. And now I have a bass guitar that I'm trying to learn.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I let them explore all of these things to see what they like. My daughter kind of mm-hmm. gravitates towards drawing. So mm-hmm. so my wife took over on that part because my wife loves to draw. So
oh, I love that.
Yeah. So but you know what? And in and of that, that's why my daughter knows how to write. How to write Chinese characters a lot better than my wife, because my wife is drawing. I mean, my daughter's drawing.
Yep.
Yeah. So, still have to figure out what my son is into, and we, you know, just let him explore whatever he's into. And we're, you know, just as a Papa Bear let my children be children first. That kind of leads into a lot of what they find out and they kind of figure out, letting them be children. So, and that's fun. And it's funny too. My wife and I laugh constantly because of that.
I bet. So Kevin, what advice would you give? Okay, this is gonna be a two-part question. Because I want to hear how your answers are different. Uh-huh. For the first part, what advice would you give to a white parent about talking to their kids about race?
Ooh, so
we got a spark. We got something.
So I'm trying to remember this. There was a video that I saw, and I think as a teacher, I think her name is Jane Elliott. She had a room full of white adults, period. Like, she just had a room full of white adults, and she asked them to basically raise their hand if they would switch places with their black friends.
Mm-hmm.
No one raised their hand. And I'm basically cutting it all short because she asked a bunch of other questions too.
Right.
Since no one raised their hand, she basically said, so you know exactly what's happening to them, yet you would not trade places with them.
Mm.
So, you know, and one of those questions was, would you let anything that's happening to them and their children, would you let it happen to yours? And no, they wouldn't.
Of course not.
But if you know that there's issues happening to black families, black children, and you don't want it for yours, why aren't you doing anything? So it's almost like, okay, white parent telling their children about racism. You know, if you see someone being wronged, would you want that for yourself? Would you want that same wrong being directed at you? If not, then you need to say something about it. You need to do something about it, or you need to try and change something about that whole situation. That's what I would say. Probably not in those exact words, but I mean, I haven't had any that ask me stuff like that just yet. Now I will say that kind of certain subjects like that certain things got close to that, really close to that when I was working at Qualcomm, and I was working in the Taipei office for about mm-hmm. 2 months. It got close to that as far as them being real open and candid of asking questions. And I have no problem with that.
Mm.
You know, I have no problem with someone being open and candid about their questions, because I've learned that outside of the United States, people tend to be a lot more literal than in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, direct questions are just that, direct questions. There are no malice intentions behind it or anything else. So, like I said, it got real close, but the subject got changed to words in English. You know, that thing that I think I told you about this. One of my coworkers in Taiwan asked me, you know, the word awe in English means good. And yeah, it means good. And he says the word awesome also means good. And I go, yeah, it kind of means good. He goes, then why does the word awful mean bad and not full of awe? Kind of like beautiful means full of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no answer to that question.
Yeah. That word doesn't make sense.
That was literally my response to yours. Just like, you know, and I flat out told him, my only response to that was, there's a lot of things in the U.S., in the English language that's spoken in the U.S. that's borrowed from everywhere.
Hmm.
So even we don't know the answer to a lot of the things we say.
Right.
You know, so that was, like I said, it kind of got there. It kind of got switched a little bit. But there was kind of a thing where, you know, one of them did ask me about, like, you know, blacks in the U.S. And I kind of told him, no, we got a very bad. Oh, it was blacks in the U.S. in the military. as far as how is it that, you know, the country treats us so bad, yet we still join their military. And I didn't have any answer for them, because to them, as soon as they graduate high school, they have to join the military for at least 2 years.
Sure.
Every last one of them. So there's no way out of it. But I kind of jokingly said, well, the only thing I could say is, things in the U.S. are like this. If I were to get robbed on the street here in Taipei, I could not describe who robbed me, because all of you look the same. And they kind of laughed at me. But I said, that's kind of how the relations are in the U.S. Is to a certain group of people, we all look the same. Mm-hmm. Now, I know the differences between people in Taiwan, but that was my example to them. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's the best way I could put it for the subject that we were on and skating on, but we didn't get very deep with that. It's one of those. I'm kind of fluid to the conversation. When if someone breaches it, I won't breach it because I have no need to. You know, I have no need to. It's more or less them searching for understanding from someone like me. And yeah, I have been told on plenty of occasions by the folks in Taiwan and folks in India that I'm a very approachable person. And I tell them they're lying. Because everybody says I have a very bad attitude. But
they just got to get you at the right moment. But you're a helper. And so for the people who need help, you seem approachable.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay. Yes. I want to get you to get to the part two of my question. Yes. So what advice would you give to your fellow Black and brown parents when talking to their kids about race?
Don't beat around the bush, because the racism your kids will experience will not beat around the bush. Even though it may be, you know, some kind of underhanded backdoor racism type stuff, trust me, children see it. They may not know how to articulate it, but they see it. You know, just don't beat around the bush with them. I do my damnedest not to beat around the bush with my daughter. I flat out told her one time, like, you know, whenever she's ready, I want her to learn self-defense. And she goes, why would I want to do that? And I go, because I told her, I feel that if someone ever touch you or hurt you in a way that you didn't want, touch you in a way that you didn't want, I want to get a call from the police station to come and pick you up that you did some damage. Like, you know, I just told her to be just straightforward. I just try to be, you know, I'll tell them to be straightforward. Don't cut corners, like anything, even, you know, so that kind of sets me up for a very, very, very interesting conversation about the birds and the bees. But
you gotta be consistent.
Yeah. Gotta be consistent. So yeah, just be straightforward about it. You know, if you can find a way to be a bit tactful with it, that's cool, but you're probably going to have to, I guess, get them accustomed to the terminology and the things that you're about to say to them, and kind of help them make those connections. Cause if not, they're going to, a kid is going to take you literally. They're not going to, you know,
get the subtleties or the metaphor.
Right. They're not going to get that. They're not going to get the metaphor of what you're trying to tell them. So you have to be straightforward with the child. And that's one thing that I figured out real fast, you know. I mean, I actually like it. So
it makes it easier.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier. Makes it a lot easier. So that way the questions don't come back all crazy sounding to you. because you know you be straight, you're straightforward with them, the questions will come straightforward back at you. You may not be prepared for how they ask the question, or you may not even be prepared for the question, but it'll be a question you understand, you know, from their aspect. But yeah, just be straightforward. Just don't, please don't cut corners with talking to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's sound advice. Well, Kevin, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you for digging into this intersection of activism and racism and gender and parenting.
Yes.
I didn't even know that we were going to go where we went. I so appreciate you. So, Kevin, if people want to follow you, follow your work, follow your thoughts, where's the best place for them to find you?
Best place to find me at Facebook. My name is just Kevin R. Askew. Instagram, you know, Instagram, my handle is Suge Nice, and that's S-U-G-E underscore K-N-I-C-E. I can tell you what that means.
That's another podcast.
Yeah. It's not a bad meaning, but I can tell you what that means. It's actually when I met my wife too. But Suge Nice, S-U-G-E underscore K-N-I-C-E. And yes, my name will pop up as Bravo Unreasonable. And I got that from a Wu-Tang name generator, and I loved it.
Okay, I need to go to this right now.
Yeah, it was a Wu-Tang name generator, and it came up Bravo Unreasonable. And I was like, yo, I love that. So, and the same handle on Twitter, Suge underscore Nice. But I also do have an online radio station with the radio show every Mondays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific. Oh, I forgot. The radio station is uhypedradio.com, U-H-Y-P-E-D radio.com. And that's also the handle for the radio station, just uhypedradio.com, U-H-Y-P-E-D radio, at Twitter, at Instagram, at Facebook, at SoundCloud, at Mixcloud,
all the clouds, all the places where you can get your streaming music. Yeah, Kevin is a music aficionado.
Yes.
He's passionate. He's an expert, and I definitely recommend that you tune into his tunes because it's good stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. My Monday show is basically geared to new music, you know, to the music creator that just, they make stuff in their bedroom, however they make it, and they just want it to be heard, you know. So I just play it regardless of genre, but not regardless of content. I stop at Trump propaganda.
Okay.
Everything else is fair game, but I stop at Trump propaganda, and I've gotten it too, so trust me, I stop there.
It's all out there.
Oh yes.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here, Kevin.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.